Money FM 89.3, best of weekends. International News Review.
Joining me on the line for our international news review today, Nicholas Fang, the managing director at Black Dot, also the director of security global affairs at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Hello, Nick. How are you doing today?
Good morning, buddy. I'm doing fine. Of course, you know, kind of missing seeing you in person, but good to be chatting with you on the phone as well.
Yeah, we would certainly like to have you here in person. It's always nice to have somebody sitting across. But, you know, we are dedicated at Money FM to practicing our social distancing as well and making sure that we get as healthy as we possibly can as soon as possible, which brings us to our first story, not an international story, but a domestic story, and that is the strengthening of our circuit breaker mode as of yesterday. You know, no one's allowed on the beaches and et cetera. Was this an inevitable occurrence, do you think? Were we always headed toward stronger measures?
Well, I think to sort of answer the question on a more macro level, there have been people who are asking, why didn't we just go with tougher measures, go for a DORSCON red or a full lockdown from the beginning, if we knew that things weren't necessarily going to get better that quickly. And I think it's obviously a tricky decision for any government to contemplate. We've seen similar situations all around the world. Different governments have taken different positions to varying degrees of success. And just looking from our perspective and what we see the government putting into place here in Singapore, obviously their hopes were that, you know, by not going to a super draconian hard lockdown, you know, nobody's on the street. Any gathering more than two people on the street is illegal. You know, you could be arrested for that sort of thing. Avoiding that avoids creating, you know, undue or unnecessary panic, which, as we have seen, Singaporeans are a little bit prone to when it comes to hoarding and panic buying of food. And it also sends a signal of calm and confidence to the rest of the world, foreign investment and things like that. So I think the preference would have been for the first set of measures that we put in place to have worked. Unfortunately, due to a number of different factors, largely around, you know, human behavior, they haven't. And I'm still heartened to see it's been a very measured approach by the government to signal to people that, hey, if you play ball and we get the results that all of us want and need to see, we're not going to go, you know, super draconian. But if you don't, we're going to, you know, step by step, level by level, increase the, turn up the heat, as it were.
Yeah. Why do you think it's been so hard for people to get on board with this, to understand? I mean, the government has done a great job for over three months now of explaining why the distancing is important and, like you say, doing the sort of phased elements of this. And it seems like at every phase, at least some percentage, maybe it's not a majority of people, but a noticeable percentage of people just have not seemed to understand that's important and then carry on with it. You know, from a psychological standpoint, I don't think that the government could have done anything differently to educate people. What do you think about that?
Well, that's the $1 million question, isn't it, Glenn? Why do people behave the way they do? If we all could figure it out, we'd be marketing gurus by now. not to be too harsh on my fellow Singaporeans, but you know, my personal view is that in a lot of these instances where we see large scale sort of crises or stuff that affects us on a national level, a lot of us, you know, I wouldn't say I'm the younger generation, but from my generation downwards, I don't think a lot of us have experienced, you know, really, really bad scenarios. I mean, 2003 was SARS. I remember a little bit about it, but, you know, I'm not sure that full impact of the sacrifice and how bad things could be actually sticks in people's minds. For sure, none of us really remember World War II, Japanese occupation, for example, where, you know, life was really bad for 3 years. So when you sort of take that into consideration, you can kind of understand why people react the way they do. I mean, we're not asking people to go into, you know, sort of food rationing, water rationing kind of scenarios where your utilities are cut off or stuff like that. We're just saying, you know, try to spend as little time in the contact of other people as possible. Stay at home, You know, the internet still works, Netflix still works. You know, you have running water, you have a toilet that works, you have electricity. Life isn't that bad. But you know, even the Prime Minister in one of his earlier addresses, he said it's going to be tough because the reason why it's called an anti-social behavior is because it's anti is a negative, right? It goes against human norms and human instinct not to socialize and not to meet other people. So yeah, it's definitely tough, but it could certainly be worse, you know.
Yeah, we're talking with Nicholas Feng, Managing Director of Black Dot and Director of Security and Global Affairs for the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Nick, earlier this week you wrote an article about how COVID-19 could reshape our world for the better, and I think it is important to try to look for positive outcomes from this very trying circumstance that we're all in. Of course, there's a lot of uncertainty and for some people a lot of sadness and you know, with people, family members or people they know that are sick or perhaps even have passed away. But it is important that we try to look and see what maybe some positive lessons are that could come out of this. And in your article, you talk about that. Take us through what your thinking is on how COVID-19 could reshape our world for the better.
Yeah, you know, I thought quite long and hard before writing that piece because obviously, as you mentioned, there are a fair few people who have been directly impacted in very tragic ways. In terms of the health of their loved ones, and of course in Singapore we've had 8 deaths so far, so it's a very tragic situation. A lot of people still in hospital right now. At the same time, there are many people whose jobs and livelihoods have been impacted by the broader economic impact of COVID-19. So I was a bit cautious, but I think it doesn't help us collectively if we focus purely on the negatives. If we spend too much time harping on about how, oh, I can't go to my favorite restaurant, oh, you know, I can't go out and run on the beach or play football with my friends. I mean, those are things that we give up, but it's not for a very long period of time. Hopefully, it's just a month. But at the same time, there are certain aspects of this particular crisis, when you compare it to, like I mentioned, you know, the threat of war, foreign invasion, or other viruses like Ebola, which are far more in terms of you know, its spread and its impact on health and things like that. We actually have the chance and the opportunity to fight this virus literally and figuratively is in our hands, right? If we wash our hands, if we disinfect our hands, and if we're careful about our contact with other people, we can really slow the transmission down of this virus. So we could have a direct impact on the outcome of this particular crisis. Whereas if you talk about the global financial crisis, that's a little bit out of our hands, right? You know, in the last one in 2008. And on a second level, as somebody who runs my own businesses, I've seen, you know, there are certainly a few opportunities that we wouldn't have if things were business as usual. I think a lot of my friends, yes, they have been impacted severely, whether it's from the sports industry or the performing arts sector. You know, everything has been cancelled, right? So incomes have almost dried up. But at the same time, you have people now who, out of necessity, are forced to be more creative. They are being pushed to come together to collaborate. And we're starting to think a lot more about how the new normal is going to be in a post-COVID world. Now people, you know, we're talking on the phone now. People are doing a lot more video conferencing in terms of meetings. People, consumers are shopping almost exclusively online right now. And people are starting to shift their behaviors already in ways that might be permanent once we come out of this pandemic. So, you know, we need to start thinking now. And most of the time when things are going well, nobody has time to start thinking about the future. Everybody's just making hay while the sun shines. But now we actually have a chance to reposition and to rethink about how we want to focus our business models for the future.
It is interesting because in the past couple of years, we've seen the Singapore government very heavily promoting the move toward automation, for example. And I wonder if some ways this is even going to push that faster and further, you know, as a result of, like you say, these new business models and these new business tools that we're having to use, not necessarily all automated, but you know, we are having to think in a new technological way, and force ourselves to get out of some old comfort zones.
Definitely, I think you know you run your own business as well, Glenn. You know, and I think that we are starting to think how can we reach our consumers around the world, you know, using, you know, digital online technology. Maybe we could shift some of our product online so that we don't have to travel so much. We should be more sustainable for the planet. We were talking for the show, right? This current situation where we're doing interviews over the phone allows you then to have to speak to someone in DC and someone in Seoul a little bit later on. And then, of course, you know, the rest of us here in Singapore. So things are already shifting. And I think if we can stop, you know, being unhappy and sad about being cooped up at home for 1 month, we would be able to actually identify a lot more of these opportunities.
Yeah, we have. Let's shift gears just slightly here. We have now seen the U.S. has taken over as the epicenter of the global pandemic. Some 20,000 American deaths from the coronavirus has now surpassed that even of Italy, which was the leader before, according to data that has been compiled by Johns Hopkins University. At this phase of the virus and what we've seen coming out of the U.S., I saw an opinion piece the other day saying that, you know, because the way the U.S. has handled this, the potential influence, positive influence in the future going forward by the U.S. has taken a real sort of reputational hit. And I know you do a lot of that type of work as well. And of course, we can't discount the size and the strength of the American economy and military and all that. But there does seem to be a psychological ding happening against the U.S. credibility at this point. How do you see it from your perspective?
Well, this is something, I mean, we've spoken about it ourselves, you know, in earlier months as well, about whether it's an intentional pullback from global influence under President Trump. You know, it's America first, make America great again. Everybody should pull their fair share. The U.S. isn't going to subsidize, you know, stuff around the world anymore. That's been a consistent position of his. So I think we've already been seeing sort of that erosion in recent times. And then sort of, you know, as a playground saw sort of situation, the sort of withdrawal of the U.S. has created the opportunity for China to come on board and play a more significant role on the global stage. Now, with both China having been at the epicenter of the COVID-19 outbreak in the initial phase and truly dominating the headlines in terms of the outbreak in the first phases, and now the U.S. sort of, you know, taking over center stage in terms of the numbers, not in a good way, in terms of death tolls and the total number of cases, I think we're seeing how, you know, more importantly, a global pandemic or a crisis of this particular nature can actually impact the sort of geopolitical balance of power. In terms of the influence that this, you know, the impact this will have on U.S. influence around the world, that's an interesting question, because I think most of the criticism and views about the scenario developing in the U.S. has been about how they've handled this domestically. I saw reports that, you know, 5 years ago, then President Obama had highlighted the risk of a flu-like pandemic. He actually mentioned, you know, the threat that could eventuate in 4 or 5 years. Which will bring it to right about now. And, you know, they were talking about the need to invest in the medical infrastructure and things like that. We hear about the shortages of medical resources and equipment, PPE, masks, ventilators in the U.S. So it begs the question about domestic planning and whether or not they can actually overcome that challenge right now. I think there's still a little bit of a question mark as far as we can tell.
Very interesting. Yes. I mean, it's too early to tell a lot of these things. We won't know for, you know, months, if not years, what the eventual effect is. But it is worth looking at, I think, to begin looking at it now. And Nicholas Fang, we certainly appreciate your viewpoints on all these issues today. Managing Director at Black Dot, also the Director of Security and Global Affairs at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Thanks for being on with us today, Nick. Really appreciate it.
Good talking to you, Glenn.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.